holding on play Aleph Amud Bey's seven lines from the bottom. The Mishnah said, Hovohu al Mashkin, that if a person lends somebody else money on a Mashkin, Shema Sachar, then the Malver is a Shema Sachar. So the Gemara says, Lema Masnis in the Lake Rabbi Yezer. Would we have to say that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yezer? The Tanya, a Malver is Haver al Mashkin, a person lends somebody else money on a Mashkin, but over the Mashkin, and the mashkin is lost, or whatever, or something happens that now the mashkin is no longer available. So Yeshova, the malveh, who is the shomer, has to swear like any shomer chinam would that he wasn't pesheya v'yito ma'osav, and then he gets his money given to Rabbi Yezer. So we see that Rabbi Yezer holds that he's a shomer chinam. The fact that he doesn't just say shomer chinam, the fact that he says Yeshova v'yito ma'osav. So Rashi explains the Shavua is that he wasn't Peshea. The fact is, we've learned earlier in the Masechta that a Shomer has to swear several different things. But the point is, the Chassam Sofer actually says, the Chiddush is over here, you would think, why does he even need to swear that he was Peshea? What else would he have the Mashkin for, if not in order to be able to collect with it? And therefore, the Chiddush is, nevertheless, he still has to swear. Anyway. That's Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Akiva only Yochel Loi Maloi. Rabbi Akiva says no. He could the loiva could tell him. From here we sani el al mashkin. You only lent me money because of the mashkin. Over the mashkin, of the ma'osecha. So if the mashkin is lost, then your money is lost. So in other words, Rabbi Eliezer is now Rashi explains like this. There's two ways of looking really at what the purpose of the mashkin is for. Is it that a person is going to actually collect the debt from it later on, and he's going to say, I lent you $100, I'm taking a mashkin worth $100, and eventually if you don't pay, then I'm going to keep the mashkin or sell it or whatever. Or is it that he's using it more as a proof this way later on? If the guy denies and says, I never borrowed the money from you, then he'll be able to say, well, what's your mashkin doing by me then? So Rabbi Eliezer is taking the view that the purpose of it is not for collecting, the purpose of it is just to be certain that he is just to be able to use as a proof. But nevertheless, he's a shomer chinam, and if it gets lost, then he's going to collect from someplace else. Whereas Rabbi Akiva is saying that he's taking it for the purpose of collecting, which is called in Aramaic guvain. So according to Rashi, Rabbi Akiva is holding that he's taking the mashkin for guvaina, and according to Rabbi Eliezer, he's not. Continues the Braisa. Avol hilvo elof zuz b'shtar, but if you lent him 1,000 zuz with a shtar, v'yiniach le'mashkin aleihem, and he gave him a mashkin, divrei hakol over the mashkin of the ma'osev. Then everybody is going to agree that if the mashkin is lost, then the money is lost, because then it's clear that he took the mashkin for guvain. Because if it was just taking it, as we said, the other possibility is lias batuach b'ma'osav, to be certain that the other guy can't deny it, he doesn't need that, because once he has a shtar, then the other guy can't deny it anyway. And the shtar provides a shibud karkois, which means that he's going to be able to for sure collect. So therefore, he's certain on that. So therefore, the only reason he collected that mashkin must be for guvaina. And now, therefore, if the mashkin is lost, then the other guy can say, everybody would agree that, look, in that case, the mashkin was worth as much as the loan. You were supposed to return me the mashkin. You didn't. Therefore, that cancels out the loan. Anyway, so it seems that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Eliezer, because Rabbi Eliezer is saying that he's a Shema Chinam, and our Mishnah is saying that he's a Shema Sachar. Tosfos actually discusses over here in light of the continuation of Sugya, that's not so simple to say that's the underlying Machlokas, because whether he's taking the mashkin for guvaina or whether he's taking it for other purposes. Rather, Tosfos explains, now the Gemara is going to go on now to distinguish between whether he took the mashkin at the time of the halva or later on. So Tosfos also discusses in some detail that it might be at, that, that, uh, that it might, that even to begin with, the Gemara knew that the Machloikas is, that the Machloikas is not necessarily only when B'Shas Halva Osay or not. It could be, the Machloikas would be talking about in, for example, Tosfos says that Rabbi Eliezer would hold even when he takes the, even when he takes the Mashkin, not B'Shas Halva. Anyway, so the Gemara answers, I feel the tamer of the Yezer, that's the answer, that you could either way say the halacha is, that the Mishnah goes like Rabbi Yezer, but like Kasha, Kansha Mishkinah, Mishasava also, Kansha Mishkinah Shaloi, Mishasava also. It depends whether he took the Mashkin at the time of the halva or not. When he took it at the time of the halva, that's when Rabbi Yezer is going to say that he's Shemachinam. Because then, again, we can say that he took it for, that he took it for not for Guvina, but only to prevent the guy from denying it. But if he took a mashkin later on, when he's demanding the money and the guy's not paying, then we can say that he's taking a mashkin for Guvina, and then we can say Rabbi Eliezer would agree that he's a Shoma Sacher and is going to be chayev no matter what happens there. So again, here's where Tosfos has these long discussions, and then the two Tosfos and on this Amud about whether indeed we're talking about that the Rabbi Eliezer is specifically saying his din when he took the mashkin b'shas halva, or maybe would he hold to a certain extent even shaloi b'shas halva, that also we would say that sometimes he's a, that sometimes he's a shem chinam, that sometimes he's a shem asamba on it. Anyway, so the Gemara asks, v'ha'aydi v'aydi hilvo on the mashkin tatani. What do you mean though? Both the Mishnah and the Braisa are using the expression hilvohu ala mashkin, meaning that he lent him on a mashkin, which implies that there, which implies that it was at the time of the halva. So that can't be the answer. That can't be the distinction between what Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim are saying. Ella loy kasha can shilvo mos, can shilvo peiros. Rather, we can answer that the difference is whether he lent him money or whether he lent him peiros. If he lent him money, then we can say that he's not really gaining anything, as we learned in the Mishnah, because if he kept the coins in his possession, it's not like they would spoil or something. He could have easily used them for his own business or lent them out to somebody else or something. So therefore, you can say he's not really gaining anything from lending the money and giving the mashkin. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer would hold that he's only a shemachinam. Kan chuvo peris, whereas the Mishnah is talking about where he lent him fruit, where therefore then, So now he's lending him fruit. He's going to get back money. So then the fruit would have eventually spoiled. So therefore, as we learned in the Mishnah, we had the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda who makes that distinction. So now we'd say Rabbi Eliezer makes a similar distinction and says that that in one case he'd be a Shema Chinam and in the other case he'd be a Shema Sa. So the Gemara says, "V'hamid katani sefer Rabbi Yehuda omi hovori ma'is shema chinam hovori peiros shema sachar." What do you mean, though? Since the sefer of our Mishnah continues with Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that distinguishes between lending money and lending peiros, miklal the Tanakama leshanile, implying that the Tanakama does not hold of any such distinction. So then, in that case, then how can we say that the first part of the Mishnah, according to the Chachamim, you're going to say is going to work according to Rabbi Eliezer's opinion as well? That, in other words, we'd say there's two different machlokas, one between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, and another one between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. And the first part of the Mishnah, you want to make go both according to both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. That would require us to say the first part of the Mishnah agrees with Rabbi Yehuda that there's a distinction between whether he lent him money or whether he lent him fruit, and only in the Sefer the Mishnah does Rabbi Yehuda make that distinction. So the Gemara says you could answer Kula Rabbi Yehuda. You could answer that maybe the entire Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yehuda. V'chasuri mechzera, you could say the Mishnah is missing words. V'hochi katani, what the Mishnah means is like this. Hilvo al a mashkin shema sachar. If he lent him money on a mashkin, then he's a shema sachar. V'med v'ram amurim shehilvo peiros. When would that be talking about? Only when he lent him fruit. Avolvoi mois, but if he lent him money and the guy gave him a mashkin shema chinam. And that would be, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Shter Rabbi Yehuda Omer, because Rabbi Yehuda makes that distinction, Hilvo Mos, Shema Chinam, Hilvo Peres, Shema Sachar. So you can say, therefore, that the Mishnah is going like that, and then in that case, it works according to Rabbi Eliezer. Well, the question is, Yehoch HaKamal HaMasnissin, Deloitte Rabbi Akiva. The problem is that it comes out not like Rabbi Akiva at all. We wanted to make the Mishnah work according to both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. Now you're telling me the way you're just saying with Chasuri Mechsira is the Mishnah is only going to work like Rabbi Eliezer. And that's we don't want that because Sam Mishnah Rabbi Akiva. The Sam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Meir is a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. So ordinarily, your Sam Mishnah is going to follow the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. So if we said that the Mishnah is according to both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, then good. Stam Mishnah should be as according to as many opinions as possible. But how can we say it's only according to Rabbi Eliezer? And on top of that, we're even doing a Chasuri Mechsira to make that happen. So the Gemara says, Al Machbar, it must listen to like Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, well then it's clear that the Mishnah is indeed not like Rabbi Eliezer. There's no way to make the Mishnah work like Rabbi Eliezer. Necessarily, we're going to have to say that this is one of those Stam Mishnayis, which is not according to everybody. So here was also part of what Tosfos is discussing before. We said before that Rabbi Eliezer would agree by a shtar, that Rabbi Eliezer would agree when there's a shtar. We said in the Braisa that when there's a shtar and a mashkin, then he's considered a shema socher on the mashkin, and therefore that if the mashkin is lost, so is the choyv. So now Tosfos says, so how can we say, why are we saying the Mishnah is clearly not like Rabbi Eliezer? The Gemara could have explained that the Mishnah is talking about where there's a shtar. So therefore Tosfos says, so that's where Tosfos says that obviously, when we say that Rabbi Eliezer is Moida, that's what we were saying before, there is a distinction between B'Shas Alva and Shaloi B'Shas Alva. The Gemara is not rejecting that possibility completely. Even Shaloi B'Shas Alva, only Shaloi B'Shas Alva is when Rabbi Eliezer is going to say that if he has a shtar and a mashkin, so he had the shtar from the beginning, now he's taking a mashkin, then Rabbi Eliezer is going to say that he's obviously not taking the mashkin for govina, for collecting, because he can do that with the shtar, rather he's taking it, actually the other way around, he must be taking it for govina to collect. He can't be taking it just zichron dvorim ba'alma, because he already has a shtar for that, and it's Shaloi B'Shas Alva, so therefore that's where Rabbi Eliezer would say that he's a Shema Sachar. But since our Mishnah necessarily, since we established before that our Mishnah is necessarily talking about B'Shas Alva, then therefore that's why the Gemara has to say that the Mishnah is obviously not like Rabbi Eliezer. Yes, Rabbi Eliezer is going to say there's a case where he's a Shema Sachar, but that wouldn't be the case addressed in our Mishnah, because that would be when he took the Mashkin not B'Shas Alva, and here we're saying the Mishnah is when he took a B'Shas Alva. So the Gemara continues. Let's analyze Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva's machlokas further. Fine, we've established that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, we've established that our Mishnah cannot be like Rabbi Eliezer, because clearly our Mishnah is talking about, because clearly in order to make it work according to Rabbi Eliezer, we would have had to say that it would work only according to Rabbi Eliezer, and we can't do that. Unless again we were to say that the Mishnah is talking about, according to Tosfos, Shaloi B'Shas Alva, and it's clear that not, because the expression Hovol Al Mashkin implies that he lent him money and he gave him a mashkin at the time of the halva. So Lema B'Deloi Shavi Shir Mashkin Shir Zuzi, should we say that the machloikas is a different one, that the machloikas would be when the mashkin is not worth as much as the loan? So in other words, we might say that if it's worth as much as the loan, then Rabbi Eliezer is going to agree. He obviously took it for govain, because then that's the point. Why did he make sure to demand a mashkin that's worth as much as the loan? So that if the guy defaults on the loan, then he'll be able to use the mashkin to pay it off. So now the machlokas would only be that when it's not. So here we had Rabbi Eliezer saying that he's a shem chinam, and he swears that he wasn't pesheya on it, and he still collects his debt. And Rabbi Akiva is saying that no, the other guy can say that now that once the mashkin is lost, so is the loan, because they cancel each other out. So are we going to say that lema b'loy shavi mashkin shir zuzi, that with the machloikas is strictly when the mashkin is not worth as much as the whole loan, so obviously he can't be collecting it for guvaina, because then why wouldn't he have taken a mashkin that's worth more? So therefore it must be only for zichr and dvarim ba'alma, just in order that the guy should remember that he has an outstanding loan and not be able to deny it. And in that case, Rabbi Eliezer holds that's not enough of a reason to make him a shomasach. So then we would say over to Shmuel Kamiflegi, and then we would say that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva are arguing on the svara that Shmuel said. The Amar Shmuel, Haiman de Oisfe Alpha Zuzi Lachabre. Shmuel said that if somebody lent somebody else 1,000 zuz, v'anachle kata the magla alai ilavaihu, and he gave him the handle of a shovel. Actually, a magel is a sickle that you use for harvesting grain. So he gave him the handle of a sickle as the mashkin, which is worth a lot less than 1,000 zuz. Shmuel says, "Oved tata the magla ovdu alfa zuz." If the handle is lost, then the 1,000 zuz is lost as well. Because in other words, the mashkin is worth a lot less than the thing. So Rashi explains that since it's not that Shmuel would say. That Shmuel would say that he's willing to accept it, that he's willing to accept on himself that the Choyv and the Mashkin go together. It doesn't matter the fact that it's worth a lot less. He implicitly accepted on himself that's how it's going to be, that the two things are tied together. Here's also Tosfos argues in some detail with Rashi and says that a couple of problems. One of them being, what kind of a svara is that? Who would do that? Who would say, "I'm taking this kata de magla, and automatically with that, I'm willing to forego the whole loan if it's gone." And also there's other questions that Tosfos has as well. Again, we were saying before, it's clear that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Eliezer. If we're going to say that when the mashkan is worth as much as the loan, then it's definitely for Govina, and therefore he's definitely a Shema Sachar. Well, then again, we're back to the question, why did we say our Mishnah is clearly not like Rabbi Eliezer? We could have said that the Mishnah is talking about that kind of case. So Tosfos has a lot of discussion about that, and they end up saying that actually what we mean is they're arguing in both cases. So they'd be arguing when it's worth the same amount as the loan, and also when it's not worth as much as the loan. When we say lema v'dishmul kamitzli, we don't mean that they're arguing exclusively on the case that Shmuel is talking about, where the mashkin is worth a lot less than the loan. In fact, they would be arguing even when it is worth the same amount, and Rabbi Eliezer would still say that he's only a shrem chinam. Actually, Tosfos says that really, when the Mishnah says that he's a Shema Sachar anyway, what it really means is, in other words, that he's going to be chay, he's going to lose everything for Gneva Vaveda, but not Unsa. So again, according to Rashi, the point is, the Gemara is saying that maybe Shmuel and that maybe Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva are arguing exactly on the same svara as Shmuel, specifically when the mashkin is worth less than the loan. In other words, implying that according to Rashi, if it was worth the same amount, they wouldn't argue. Again, Tosfos disagrees with that and says that actually they might be arguing in both cases. Anyway. So can we say then that that's what Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva are arguing about? And there might in fact be a case where Rabbi Eliezer is going to hold that he is a Shema Sachar. So the answer is no. On the contrary, when the mashkin is not worth as much as the entire loan, then everybody would disagree with Shmuel and would say, so also when Rashi is saying that implicitly by taking a mashkin that's worth less than the loan, Rashi learns that implicitly it means that he's willing to forego the whole loan if the thing is lost. So here's another point that Tosfos disagrees with Rashi. And says that no, that just the opposite. Shmuel's din would only be if he says befeirush, "I'm willing to forego the whole loan if the mashkin is gone." But otherwise, if he doesn't say that befeirush, then we don't say that it's going to be that way. Anyway, so the answer is even the loishavi mashkin shirazuzi. If the mashkin is not worth as much as the money to kula amal less lahud to Shmuel, then everybody would disagree with Shmuel. Nobody would say, in other words, like Shmuel is saying, that if the loan was 1,000 zuz and the mashkin was the handle of a sickle, that then we would say that ovid mashkin ovid ma'isav. Then we wouldn't say that, neither according to Rabbi Eliezer nor according to Rabbi Akiva. In fact, in that case, what we would do is we would deduct the value of the mashkin from the loan, and you'd still have the machlokas. What would take place over there? Would we say, Rashi explains, according to Rabbi Eliezer, we would still say we would deduct the value of the mashkin from the loan. And according to Rav Akiva, we wouldn't do that anyway, because the question would be again whether, according to, or the other way around, according to Rav Eliezer, we would not deduct anything, because therefore that's why Rav Eliezer considers him a shem chinam, because then the mashkan has very little to do with the loan. According to Rav Akiva, he would lose, we would deduct the amount, the value of the handle from the mashkan, but he'd still be paying the rest. So that's not the machlokas. The machlokas where Rav Eliezer is calling him a shem chinam and Rav Akiva is calling him a shem sachar, and specifically, where it is worth as much as the loan. So the mashkin was not the handle of a shovel and was not the handle of a sickle or something like that, but something which really is worth a thousand zuz. So therefore, so what Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva are arguing about is within Rabbi Yitzchak's opinion. How do we know that when a person that when a person gets a mashkin, when a Baal Choyv is taking a mashkin, that he actually is considered to own it? So Rashi holds that it means, so again, here you also have a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi holds that it means that he owns it for all purposes, even as far as oinsin, which would then, that would bring us back to what we said before, that according to Rav Akiva, if the mashkin is lost, then so is the loan, because even though it was ba'onis, nevertheless, once the mashkin is gone, then the choyv, which was equal to it, is also gone. So Rav Yitzchak says that he's koine to be chayiv, even in oinsin. Tosfos and most other Rishonim disagree with that, and say that no, he's not chayiv in oinsin, he would only be a shomer sofer. So it is considered his for many purposes, including the fact we learned this din in kedushin as well. He could use it to be makadish a woman, which is usually the acid test of whether something belongs to a person or not. And we have other examples of that as well. But nevertheless, still, you can't say that he bought it, because eventually he does have to return it. So therefore he'd be considered. Therefore, most Rishonim consider that he's a shomer sacher. Again, Rashi says that not, that he's actually chayev in oinsin. So now, when the Mishnah had said that he's a shomer sacher, so one of the questions on Rashi, besides, you have a number of questions on Rashi, but then if he's chayev in oinsin, that he's not a shomer sacher. So they're arguing within what Rav Yitzchak says. How do we know that a Baal Choyv actually acquires the mashkin to a certain extent? Because the pasuk describes like this. The pasuk says, when you take a mashkin from somebody, if it's something that he needs every day or every night, then you have to return it to him every day or every night, as the case may be. We're going to learn the details of those dinim at the end of the ninth parak. We're also going to learn over there, then, what's the point of the mashkin if you return it to him every day. And we're going to say one point is, it makes it that one, that if the guy dies, if the loiva dies and you have the mashkin in your possession, then you can keep it. You don't have to return it to them. It also means that that the loan won't get canceled by Shemitah. Anyway, that's the Torah tells us this dinim in a couple of places, in Parshas Mishpatim and in Parshas Kisetze. The Torah points out this, the Torah tells us this din, that you have to return it. If it's a pillow, for example, you have to return it to him every night. And if it's something that he needs for his work, you have to return it to him every day. Anyway, so now the Pasuk says, when you return it, then the Pasuk says, the guy will give you a bracha. He'll be very thankful to you that you do that. And it will be considered for you tzedakah before Hashem. Now, the simple meaning of the pasuk Rashi says just means something like that. It means the guy, we can expect the guy will give you a bracha for being so generous to him and returning to him every day. But even if he doesn't, don't worry. Even if the loiva doesn't bless you, Hashem will bless you and Hashem will appreciate it. But now, Rabbi Yitzchak is focusing on the word tzedakah. If the malva is not acquiring the mashkin in the first place, stock and the nole, then how can we call it stock? We could call it something else. We can call it tov yosher, etc. But nevertheless, stocker implies that he's giving out something of his own money, or even that he's losing some money of his own. So therefore, mikan the Baal Choyv shekoina mashkin. From here, we see the Baal Choyv actually acquires the mashkin. So we can say that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva are arguing within that point. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with Rabbi Yitzchak and says that he's not koneh the mashkin. Therefore, he's not going to lose anything of his loan if the mashkin is lost. And he's only a Shema Chinam. Rabbi Akiva is going to say that he's Koneh, and therefore he becomes like a Shema Sacher, or again, according to Rashi, even more so, because he's Chayiv and Onsen, and therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, he would actually lose the loan if he loses the mashkin. So we can say that they're arguing on within Rabbi Yitzchak's point. So the Gemara continues, no. But Tispera, how could you think that that's how you explain the Machloikas, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva? Because again, you know when Rabbi Yitzchak could be talking about when he took the mashkin, not at the time of the halvah. Because the din that we're saying that you have to return the mashkin every day is only talking about a mashkin that you take later on when the guy defaults. The context of the psukim actually tells us this, because the context of the psukim is that it's talking about that you want a mashkin from him, and the pasuk says you can't go into his house. Bachutz tamer, you have to stand outside the house, and the loiver is going to bring you out a mashkin. Later on, when we discuss these dinim at the end of the ninth perek in the Puf Tesvav or so, we're going to talk about that. Puf Yadalad, Puf Tesvav, we're going to talk about that even a shliach based din is not allowed to go into your house. Is not allowed to go into the loiver's house to collect the mashkin. Even the shliach based din has to wait outdoors. Now, necessarily, we're talking about where he didn't pay, and now Basedin is getting involved. If we're talking about when he's giving a mashkin in the first place, then Basedin has no reason to be involved. So only in that case would Rabbi Yitzchok say that the Baal Choyv koin a mashkin, because that's when he has the mitzvah to return every night or every day. Avo mishkin of a shasav ose miyamar. Since when did Rabbi Yitzchok say his din when he took the mashkin at the time of the halvah? Where there you don't have that he has to return it every night or every day, etc. And he's not necessarily collecting it for guvina. When he's collecting through a shliach based din, then again, he's obviously collecting it for guvina, because the point is, the guy is about to default on the loan. He's not paying up when he's supposed to. So now you're taking from him a mashkin, and then you're going to use that mashkin to pay off the loan if the guy doesn't pay up by a certain time. But mishkin and shalav shasav asay, then he didn't necessarily take it for guvina. He's just taking it lezichron and varim ba'alma, just so the other guy should remember that he owes him the money and not try to deny it. So therefore, so how can Rabbi Akiva agree with Rabbi Yitzchak? Rabbi Akiva is talking about even mishkanei b'shas avasei. So we still don't have a good explanation of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva's machlokes. Ela mishkanei shaloi b'shas, rather, we're going to say it like this. When the mashkin was taken not at the time of the halva, but later on, when we're in danger of default, then everybody would agree with Rabbi Yitzchak that he's koneh the mashkin, and he's considered at least a shomer sacher for it. Even chayiv and onsen according to Rashi, potter from onsen according to everybody else. V'hocha b'mishkin of a shasava also, the machloikas would be where he did take the mashkin at the time of the halvah, and there Rabbi Yitzchak's din would not apply. Or v'shomer aveda kamifagi, so the machloikas between and machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva would be about the question of when a person is watching an aveda. So right now the Gemara is assuming that watching an aveda and watching a mashkin are two similar things. And over shomer aveda kamitzvah, so the machlokas would be when a person has found a lost object, as we learned earlier in our Masechta, and he's being a shomer on it. What kind of shomer is he? So you have that machlokas, the itmar, shomer aveda. We have this machlokas earlier in Perek Eilu Metzias. When a person is watching an aveda, what kind of shomer is he at the time? Rabba omer kashem achinam, Rabbi Yosef omer kashem asachar, and Rabba and Rabbi Yosef argue, and Rabba makes him like a shem achinam, and Rabbi Yosef makes him like a shomer asachar. Now we talked about a couple of reasons why Rabbi Yosef would say that he's a shomer asachar. One reason is because of the schar of the mitzvah, and the other reason is called pruta de Rabbi Yosef, which is that which is that Rabbi Yosef would say if he can be potter from a mitzvah, where that he can be potter from a mitzvah because he's watching the Aveda. We've learned before in Eilu Metzias, and then here also. So Tosfos doesn't really discuss it over here. They discuss it more earlier in the Masechta, but different Rishonim discuss about that when we say Osek for mitzvah, potter from a mitzvah. Does that mean now Tosfos makes the point elsewhere? It can't mean that at any time he has the Aveda in his house, he should be potter from mitzvahs. By that logic, you would say that any time, for example, when a person is you'd say, for example, any time a person is wearing tefillin, he's potter from all other mitzvahs. You'd say that any time a person is doing any other mitzvah, he's potter from all other mitzvahs. It doesn't work that way. Only if he can't do both of them. And then you have different opinions of Rishonim. Are we talking about when he's oisik the poil? And let's say, for example, with a metziah, say he found an animal, and there are times when he needs to feed and water the animal and doing other things with that. At that time, he'd be potter min a mitzvah. For example, if a poor person comes to the door then for tzedakah, then he wouldn't be obligated to give him. But the Ran explains this way, that when he's actually being involved with taking care of the aveda, that's when we say he's potter min a mitzvah, but otherwise he would be chayev. And then you have, so Tosfos elsewhere asks the question. Take, for example, a person is wearing tzitzis, you're not going to say he's potter from all the mitzvahs. So again, Tosfos is over there in Sukkah and in Baba Kama and in other places explained that it depends whether the second mitzvah is going to interfere with you doing the first mitzvah. Otherwise not. So for example, you're wearing tzitzis, that doesn't interfere, then giving tzedakah doesn't interfere with that. Then you have those. We said the Ran's opinion that says that only when you're actually occupied right now with doing the mitzvah. Other Rishonim bring a similar idea. The Rashba brings it from the Gaonim, etc. Only as long as he's actually working on the mitzvah or the preparation. Actually, the Ran says only when he's working on the actual mitzvah itself. The Rashba and a number of other Rishonim say that it's actually more so even when he's dealing with the preparations for the mitzvah. For example, he's traveling to do the mitzvah, then already he'd be osik for mitzvah, potter min mitzvah. So you have several different explanations, but the point is, the halacha that Amar brings, the halacha, like the Ran, which is that when you potter, only when, and the Ran also makes a point, only when because you're doing the first mitzvah, you could conceivably do the second mitzvah, but not necessarily in the normal way. So then in that case, but otherwise, if you can do it in the normal way, then you're not potter. And then Amar brings that halacha. The context that this comes up with is in connection with you have people who are selling Sifrei Torah, tefillin and mezuzos. So except for outside of the time of Kriyashma and Tefillah, they're potter from wearing tefillin because they're busy with Malachas Shamay, writing and selling tefillin and mezuzos. And here that Amar makes a point, like the Ran, that says that if their work is going to occupy them so much that they would have to do it even during the time of Kriyashma and Tefillah, then they would be potter, because then we would say, like the Ran says, that kol ha'osek mitzvah potter min ha-mitzvah, where doing the second one would somehow interfere with the first one. If he's able to do them both together, which is not the case when you can't be selling tefillin and saying Kriyashma at the same time, but if the situation is that you're able to do both mitzvahs and one doesn't interfere with the other, then you would have to do both of them. You wouldn't say osek mitzvah potter min ha-mitzvah. Anyway, we're turning to the Gemara over here. So now, Rabbi Yosef is saying, because you are shomer in Aveda, therefore you're potter from tzedakah at the time, whether at the time that you're actually being involved with the Aveda, or where it would interfere, etc., the various answers over here. So therefore, so Rabbi Yosef would hold that he's a shomer sachar, Rabbi Yosef would hold he's a shomer chinam. So now, if we assume that watching a mashkan is the same as watching an Aveda, then it would come out that Rabbi Eliezer, who says that he's a shomer chinam, would be like Rabba, and Rabbi Akiva would be like Rabbi Yosef. Well, the Gemara says, Lema de Rabbi Yosef Tanoihi. Well, does that mean that maybe that, so Rabba's opinion actually, so Rashi says, Rabba's opinion necessarily would have to be a machlokes Tanoihi, because Rabbi Akiva, who says that if we assume, again, that a mashkin is just like an aveda, and Rabbi Akiva says that he's a shomer sachar, then obviously he must be disagreeing with Rabba, because Rabba is saying that in the case of an aveda, he's a shomer chinam. And now, at this point, Rashi says we've gone through all the possible ways of explaining Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva's machlokas, and we're left with this. So therefore, so according to Rabba, necessarily we would have to say that Rabba's opinion would not agree with Rabbi Akiva. The question is, according to Rav Yosef, would we have to say that it's also a machlokas tanoim, or can we make Rav Yosef's opinion even fit with Rav Eliezer's? That's a point of Rashi. Tosfos actually learns differently. Earlier, when we had in the Masechta in Eilat Metzias, when we had this machlokas of Rav Eliezer and of Rabba and Rav Yosef, Tosfos had explained over there that actually on the contrary, Rabba would understand that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva are arguing about Shmuel's din that we said before about where Shmuel had said the din that if the mashkin is lost, even though the mashkin was worth only a little bit, then the whole loan is lost, provided Tosfos said that he had accepted it on himself. So Rabbi would understand the machlokas in that vein. So yes, we said in our Gemara that didn't really work because we don't have to say that. We could say that they're arguing even when the mashkin is worth the entire amount of the loan. But now Tosfos says still the Gemara hasn't rejected that possibility, and in fact it could work like that. And Rabba therefore would say that the machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva is whether the mashkin is worth only a small amount, and now the loan is worth a large amount. Do we say that once the mashkin is lost, the loan is lost? According to Rabba, we would say that yes, that's the point that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva are arguing about. Therefore, he doesn't have a problem with saying that if it is worth the same amount, to say that they would both say that he's considered a shomer chinam, and therefore that would fit nicely with his opinion. So the question would be strictly on Rav Yosef: would we have to say that Rav Yosef's opinion is only a point of Rav Akiva and not Rav Eliezer? And the answer is loy. The shomer aveda de kulam is the hud Rav Yosef. No, when it comes to an aveda, they would both agree with Rav Yosef, because there you have the schar mitzvah and there you have the osik mitzvah, potim and a mitzvah involved over there. Rather, you can say, according to Rabbi Yosef, there's one more way that you could explain the machlokas of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer. You could say, when the malva himself wants to use the mashkin, and he's going to arrange that over time, he's going to deduct from the loan an amount equivalent to what he's using it for. So Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hananel that says that no, Tzorech L'mashkin does not mean that he wants to use the mashkin. Whether the Malva himself actually can use the mashkin. Now, we had in the Mishnah, we had the opinion of Abba Shol, which we'll discuss soon in the Gemara, that he's allowed to rent it out to other people and deduct that from the loan. Does Rashi mean that when we say Malva Tzorech L'mashkin, and Rashi says he uses it, does Rashi actually mean that he himself is allowed to use the mashkin and deduct from it? Or does it not? Does it just mean so the Beis Yosef, the Tur brings that you can't. The Tur brings that you yourself cannot use the mashkin, because people are going to suspect that maybe you're undervaluing it. Maybe you're claiming that it's worth less per day than it really is in order to collect more on your choyv or something. So according to the Tur, you can't say that he himself could use it, only that he could rent it out to other people. So the Beis Yosef explains that let's say they made the agreement to begin with that he would be allowed to use it. So now there's no chashad involved. So therefore. The Pnei Yeshua furthermore points out actually that if he's renting it out to other people, like Abba Shol says, he's definitely accomplishing a mitzvah by that. And here the Gemara is going to say whether he's accomplishing a mitzvah or not. So the machloikas would only be because he's not getting any hanah from it himself. He's not using it. He's renting it out to others, and he himself is not keeping the rental money. He is, but he's deducting it from the choiv. So in other words, eventually it's kind of coming out of his pocket. So then, for sure, it's a mitzvah, and then for sure he would be a shomer sacher for it. But when he himself is using it, where he's getting hanah from it, then you would have an argument also whether he's still a shomer sacher, or whether in that case maybe he's a shomer chinam because you don't have the schar mitzvah involved. So here, but malva tzorech l'mashkin k'mifli. So Rashi explains that it means that the malva is using the mashkin. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation and says, and brings from Rabbeinu Hananel, tzorech l'mashkin means the malva is not going to be willing to lend without a mashkin. So tzorich l'mashkin means that without getting a mashkin, he's not going to be willing to lend the money, says Tosfos. Anyway, so ma'asav a mitzvah ka'ovet shilvo. So one opinion, Rabbi Akiva is going to hold. The fact is, he's doing a mitzvah by lending him money. And again, pruta de Rabbi Yosef, we're saying over here, because we were talking within Rabbi Yosef's opinion. He's potter, he's oisik l'mitzvah, he's potter min ha-mitzvah, he's potter from tzedakah while he's taking care of the mashkin. So therefore, you can say that he's a shomer sachar. Omar Sava, whereas Rabbi Yehuda holds lav mitzvah for Ovid. He's not really, you can't really say that he's doing a mitzvah. Shalana also is scabbin, because primarily he's doing it for his own anah. The Havas Shemachinam, and therefore he would be a Shemachin. So now we finally have, so we have a few different ways of understanding the machloikas of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Akiva. We went through several possibilities and shlugged them up. But we end up saying according to Rashi, what we end up is like this: Rabba and Rabbi Yosef have their argument by a shomer aveda, and we're assuming that a shomer mashkin is the same as a shomer aveda. So Rabba would necessarily have to say that his opinion would work only according to Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef now would say that they're arguing about this case of malvut sorach l'mashkin. According to Tosfos, Rabba would say that Rabba would say that they're both arguing about Shmuel's din that we said earlier in the sugya, where the mashkin is lost, is the loan automatically lost, even if the mashkin is worth a lot less than the loan, where Shmuel says that yes, and Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva would be arguing that point. Meanwhile, then, and then they'd be arguing about that. And so Rabba would explain the machlokas that way, and Rabbi Yosef would explain the machlokas about malvut tzorich l'mashkin. Now we said in the Mishnah, Abasholam mutal adam lahask mashkonis shaloni. Abasholam said that you're allowed to rent out the mashkin that belongs to a poor person, lis purchas v'holich, and you're going to over time deduct from the loan for it. So Amar Rav Chanan va'Ami, Amar Shmuel halacha ka'abashol. The halacha is like that you can do that. But va'abashol like Amar elu b'mora. However, even Abashol is not talking about all kinds of kalim. Only, for example, a mora, which is a shovel, or pasol, or chisel, v'kaudum, or an axe, hova nafish agrayu, because the amount of money that you can get for renting them out is quite a lot, v'zutra pachsayu, and the amount that they're going to get damaged and blunted is only very little, because these are tools that are made to take heavy use, and therefore, even if they're using them for a while, it's going to take a long while until they get dulled enough to not be usable. But other kinds of kalim, not, because not necessarily are you going to be able to. So the Meiri actually brings that maybe also with animals it would be much. Maybe it would say the same kind of thing. The amount of rental fee that you can get for animals is large enough, and the chances of the animal getting injured are small enough that you could do that with that as well. Not everybody agrees with that. But for example, clothing you couldn't, and other kinds of things you couldn't. Mishnah says, a person is carrying a barrel from one place to another. So you hired somebody to carry a barrel of wine for you, and barrels of wine in those times were made out of clay, out of earthenware, so they were very easily breakable. The shavra, and he broke it. Ben shemachinam, ben shemasacha yishava. So whether the order is a shemachinam, and you're not paying him, or whether he's a shemasacha and you're paying him for his work, yishava, you swear that he wasn't persheah, and then he's going to be potter, and then he's going to be potter from paying. So in other words, why? How did he break it? For example, he tripped. So we're going to deal with in the Gemara that is tripping itself considered a pshia, which is a point that we learned in Bava Kamma. Anyway. So Rabbi Eliezer says, and throughout the sugya, actually, it's really supposed to be Rabbi Lozer. It's really supposed to be Rabbi Lozer the Tana. We're going to have Rabbi Lozer the Amurda later on, but right now it's really not Rabbi Eliezer, because we're going to say that we're going to bring in the Gemara. We're going to bring a Braisa where we have Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, and then Rabbi Eliezer discussing and arguing within their opinion. And Rabbi Eliezer was long before. It was a generation before, two generations before Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. He wouldn't be discussing within what they're saying. So therefore, it has to be the Tana Rabbi Lozer ben Shamua, who was a chaver of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Anyway, sort of a lozo owner, Zev is a Yishova. Both of them have to swear. So whether Hashem achinam or whether Hashem achinam, he has to swear, like the Tanakhama said. But Rav Elazar says, utmeyani micholam zevazeli shava. But I'm surprised at that. How could you possibly be that? How could it possibly be that both of them are going to be that both Hashem achinam and Hashem achinam are going to be potter with a shvua? Isn't a Hashem asachar supposed to have a higher degree of responsibility? So he's saying zevazeli shava. He's saying I heard from my rebbeim. Like the Tanakhama, like Rameyer is saying, that both of them have to swear, but I can't understand why that should be. Why, if he's a Shem Asachar, why should he be potter from swear? Why should he be potter just with swearing? As we'll see in the Gemara exactly what his problem is. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, a person is carrying a barrel for somebody else from one place to another, the Shavra, and he broke the barrel. So he's going to have to swear whether he's a Shem Achinam or whether he's a Shem Asachar. He's going to have to swear that he wasn't Pesheya, and then he'll be Potter. Divrei Rav Meir. Rav Yehuda, I'm a Shem Achinam Yeshava, Nois Asachar Yeshalim. Rav Yehuda says it's going to go like the usual rules of Shemrim. A Shem Achinam will just have to swear that he wasn't Pesheya, because that's his only responsibility, and then he'll be Potter. If he's a Shem Asachar, if he was being paid for transporting the barrel, then he's going to need to swear. And then he's going to need to pay because then as a Shem Asachar, he's chayev for everything except for oinus. Then the Braisa continues. Rav Eliezer, again, really, it's supposed to be Rav Elazar. Rav Elazar oimus, zevzei yishava. Rav Elazar says, I agree with Rav Meir because I learned from my rabbein that they both have to swear, Shem Achinam or Shem Asachar, utmei ani michon zevzei yishava. But I'm surprised, as you said in the Mishnah, how could it be that both of them are swearing? So first, let's understand Rav Meir's opinion, and then we're going to get back to Rav Elazar. So, lememra desavar Rav Meir nitkal lav pesheo. Now, how did the guy break the barrel? He wasn't pesheo. Nevertheless, the barrel is broken. It must be that he tripped. So, does that mean that Rashi points out to say that he wasn't pesheo. A different pshia. There's obviously nothing less that he could have done than nitkal. Necessarily, he must have tripped and fallen. And also, the fact is, he's saying that he's potter by that Rav Meir is saying that even a Shem Asachar would be potter, implying that's considered an onus to fall. So it's certainly not considered pshia to fall, according to Rav Meir. V'hatanya, what we learn in Abraisa, we learned in Bava Kama, nishvara kadeh, if a person's jug of water broke in Rishus Aravim, Veloy silkoi, and he didn't remove the broken pieces from the street, or nafla gmalei veloy hamida, or if his camel fell down in Rishus Rabim and he didn't get it to stand back up, and then somebody came and tripped over the broken pieces of earthenware or over the camel, Rav Meir machayev hazekon. Rav Meir makes him chayev for the hezek. The Chum says he's potter from being judged and penalized by Beis Din, but he's going to be chayav b'din Hashemayim if he wants to be yotze. The fact that Hashem is going to hold him responsible for it, then he should pay the other guy. And we explained in Bava Kama after discussing this whole point that the machlokas is that a mayor hold nitkal pesheya, the very fact that he tripped in the first place makes him a pesheya. Therefore he's responsible for removing the hezek that he put in Rishus Rabim, the broken pieces of earthenware or the camel. And if he doesn't, then he's going to be chayav. The Chum are going to hold that he's not a pesheya, so therefore it's not considered in effect. In other words, we explained in Bava Kama that it's considered. Do we say that he made a burr? We say he made a burr, then he's responsible for making sure the burr is removed or covered. So the mayor is going to hold to begin with. He's responsible for this burr having been made. Therefore, he's going to be chayav to remove it. And if not, then he's chayav. And the Chacham are going to say that no, it's not considered that a burr that he made in the first place because it was an oinus. So the question is, so in our Mishnah and the Braisa, Rav Meir seems to be saying nitkal lav pesheya. It's not a pshia. In fact, it's something like an oinus, to the extent that Rav Meir is going to say that even a Shem Asachar would be potter if he swears that this happened, because a Shem Asachar is potter from oinus. And then on the other hand, in Bava Kama, we're saying that, he's a pesheya just for tripping, is what he considered, because he should have looked where he's going. Anyway, so what's the deal? Omer Rav Elazar, so now Rav Elazar, the Amora says, Tavra, it's a real question. Misha Shonazu, Lo Shonazu, whoever taught the Mishnah and said Rav Meir's opinion in our Mishnah, the Stam Mishnah and a Meir, Lo Shonazu cannot be the same one who learned the Braisa. Necessarily, there have to be two different Tanoim who are arguing what Rav Meir says. The word Tavra means a contradiction, although there are Rishonim who explain that it's a Loshon Shruah. Whatever, he's saying that the fact is there's an obvious irreconcilable contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa, and we can't make them both work according to the Meir's opinion, because either the Meir holds Nitka for Shea or he holds Nitka Lag for Shea. On the other hand, Rabbi Lozer would continue and explain that according to his way of looking at it, that we have a machloekus, what Rabbi Meir holds, then we would continue. Let's understand the rest of the Braisa, and the opinion of Rabbi Lozer in our Mishnah. The also of Yehuda Lamemer. So we would say like this. Rabbi Lozer is saying that you can't say it's obvious that the Mishnah and the Braisa are according to two different Tanoim. So in the Braisa, Rabbi Meir is going to say Nitka Pesheya, and therefore he has to swear that he wasn't in fact Pesheya. So now in the Braisa, Rav Yehuda comes and says, Shemachinam Yishova, yes, a Shemachinam would swear, V'nos HaSocho Yishalem, but if he's a Shemachinam, he's going to have to pay, because Rav Yehuda would say, Hai Kidine, Bahai Kidine. Each one goes according to his usual opinion. Rav Yehuda would disagree with Rav Meir. Rav Meir had said, Nitkal Pesheya in the Braisa, that the very fact that he tripped makes him a Pesheya, and therefore he would have to swear when we say that he has to swear that he wasn't Pesheya, means he'd have to swear that he didn't trip, that it was something else, that, for example, somebody came crashing into him, which would be a complete onus, because had it been that he himself tripped, Rabbi Akiva would not, Rabbi Meir would not talk to him, because Rabbi Meir would call him a Pesheya. Comes Rabbi Yehuda and says, no, tripping is not Pshia, but we have the usual dinim. Hashem Achinam has to pay for everything short of Pshia. Hashem Asafar has to pay for Gneva Aveda as well. Well then, Hashem Achinam only has to swear that he wasn't Pesheya. The Hashem Asafar is going to be Chayev, is also going to be Chayev for tripping. Not a Pesheya, but nevertheless, even if the fact is, Hashem HaSachar has to pay, even in cases where he's not Pesheya, for the Neva Vaveda, and Rabbi Yehuda is going to hold that tripping is not considered an oinus. The Oster, Rabbi Lozer Lameimar, now comes along, Rabbi Lozer, in the Mishnah and in the Braisa, and says, and he says, Ein, yes, Gemara Kira Meir. I learned from my Rebbeim, like Rav Meir, that in both cases they can swear and they're going to be potter, because Rav Meir is going to say that again we're going to assume that Rav Meir is saying Nitkal Pesheya, so therefore he has to swear that he didn't trip. But Uchmeyani, Michal and Zevazeli Shava, but I would be surprised, how can both of them swear? How can both of them be equally potter with swearing? Meaning Rav Elazar, the Amora explains, Rav Elazar the Tana, because what's Rav Eliezer's difficulty? What's Rav Elazar's difficulty? Vishlem Hashem Achinam Mishtabed like Poshaba. Hashem Achinam sure can swear that he wasn't Pesheya, because we would say that him tripping, not like Rav Meir would say that tripping is considered Pesheya, Rav Elazar would hold tripping is not considered Pesheya, so therefore we can swear that he didn't trip and that's that. El Hashem HaSachar, but am I Mishtaba, but why would the Hashem HaSachar swear? He like Poshan Nami Shalomi Boy, even without Pia, he'd still have to pay unless it was an onus. So no, we wouldn't say that tripping is an onus. We would say that tripping is considered something on a par with Gnei Vaveda. Therefore, fine, Hashem Achinam can be potter from it. But why would Hashem Asacha be potter? That's what Rabbi Lozer the Tana is so surprised about. Vafilu Hashem Achinam, and even Vafilu Hashem Achinam Nami, and really even with Hashem Achinam himself. It's easier to understand if you say that if he was walking on a slope, and then for him to trip on such a thing is closer to an onus, because he's going downhill or uphill or whatever, it's much more easy to trip on things. Shaloi b'makom midrin, but if it wasn't a slant, if it was on a flat ground, mi matzim mishtabed like Moshe, how could he swear that he wasn't Pesheya? If he trips on flat ground, Rabbi Lozer is going to say, for sure he's considered Pesheya. back to the Mamukka Midra Namin. And even if it's a, and even if it is a slope, Hatena Hecha Deleka Raya. Sure, where there's no other Raya, there was nobody else around to see what happens. So then we could talk about that he's swearing. Aval Hecha the Ikar Raya. But where there is a proof, where there are people who are available, Mesi Raya Vnifta, then he should have to bring a Raya in order to become Potter. The Tanya, as we, in fact, we learn in a Brisa, Isi Ben Yehudaimer, when the Pasuk says Ein Roya, the Pasuk describes a Shomer and says that something happened to the thing that he was watching and nobody saw. And then the Pasuk continues, Shavuah Hashem Tia Ben Shneim, then there will be a Shavuah between them, implying, Ho Yash Roya, Yavi Raya Vi Potter. If there's people who saw it, then we don't allow him to get away with a Shavuah, then we say he has to bring a proof. And he has to bring a proof, and only then he would be Potter. So, therefore, Rabbi Lazar is saying, Rabbi Lazar, the Tana is saying, and here Rabbi Lazar, the Amora, is explaining what's going on over here, what the flow of the Braisa is, that it starts with Rabbi Meir holding that Nitkal Pesheya, then we have Rabbi Yehuda, and then we have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Lazar disagreeing with that point. A nitkal is not a pesheya. Tripping is not considered a pesheya. So Rabbi Yehuda says you go according to the respective opinions, Shremachina, according to the respective rules, Shremachinam and Shremasachar. Rabbi Lazar says, yes, I learned from my Rebbeim that both of them are potter, both potter if they swear that they weren't pesheya, because the tripping itself is not considered pesheya. But Rabbi Lazar says, when you go through the various possibilities, why are they both swearing? Either we should say that first of all, why is Shemasachar getting away with that? And also, if you're going to say that it's a slope, then it should be considered. Then, if you're going to say that in a case of a slope, then you would make that distinction. But fine. But on flat ground, you shouldn't. You should necessarily say that tripping is a pshia. And also, if they can bring edim, then they should bring edim. So what would be the case, says Rabbi Lazar, where my Rebbeim said that both of them are going to get away with swearing? But the point is, Rabbi Lazar, the Amora, is saying that all of this is only according to the Braisa. Meanwhile, in the Mishnah is taking a different view of what Rabbi Meir holds. That in the Mishnah, Rabbi Meir would be holding that that Nitka Lav Pesheah, that the tripping is not considered a Pesheah, and therefore all he has to do is swear, because even a Shem Sofer, because it's considered closer to an onus rather than Pesheah, because in the Mishnah the opinion that the Mishnah is following would say that Rabbi Meir holds Nitka Lav Pesheah. Tosfos discusses in some detail that you could actually distinguish between different degrees of onus. There are things that you could say that you have a stronger onus, you have a weaker onus, and whatever, and therefore you could distinguish with that. But still, Rabbi Lazar, the Amora, is saying that you can't make the Mishnah and the Braisa work according to the same way of looking at it, because again, we have clearly in the Gemara and Bava Kamma, we say that Rabbi Meir holds Nitka Pesheah, and therefore we're going to say that our Mishnah that implies that he's an onus would not follow the opinion of the Braisa. The Braisa would hold, like the Gemara and Bava Kamma, that Nitka Pesheah, and therefore that when Rabbi Meir says Yeshava, then it would have to be that we're talking about where there wasn't a Pesheah, but rather something else happened. Not Nitka, but rather something else, and therefore he can swear to that. So all of this is one way of explaining the three-way machlokas, and then we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and we'll discuss another way of understanding this three-way machlokas in the Mishnah, between the mayor of Yehuda and Rabbi Lazar, that doesn't require us to say that there are two different Tanoim arguing what Rabbi Meir holds.